WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary and Shea Spillane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
How were your holidays? I haven't seen you since before Christmas.
I was going to say, you're such a sight for sore eyes, D.
The last time I saw you, Chris Earle and I were fighting each other to a dead tie.
I know.
In the annual music battle. And then he pulled it out with a song about, getting busy with sheep.
Oh,
had nothing to do with the holidays.
Manger.
They're not doing that in the manger.
All right. I mean, let's be fair. Do we really know what happened in that manger?
No, we don't. No, I'm sure there were all kinds of things going on in the background of the manger, you know.
No, my holidays were good. I talked about on the show before we left, my sister rented a house in the Berkshires, and we had like the most Norman Rockwell freaking Christmas ever.
There's a quaint little town down the road.
Oh, seriously.
Snow drifting through the air.
Seriously, they had lampposts, like, you know, not streetlights, lampposts. It was the most adorable town ever. It was called Great Barrington.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
It was great. But it's cool because it's this small town, but all these New York yuppies have come in and like made it their own. So it's like still very quaint, but then they have like, on my dad's birthday, we went to a restaurant with a chef that also owns a restaurant in Brooklyn.
Right.
Like,
it's like quaint New England Main Street, but there's also a deli.
Yeah.
And you can get good bagels.
Yeah. They have a cool coffee shop that isn't a cool coffee shop because a grandmother owns it. But no, we did like me and my sister and my nieces went tubing and like we all made Christmas cookies. It was very
Hallmark.
And it's well, and it's always like honestly, I'd forgotten how nice it is when spoiler alert, anyone under 10, please cover your ears, but I forgot how nice it is to have a Christmas morning with kids who still believe in Santa Claus.
Yeah,
like
wait, who doesn't believe in Santa Claus?
Oh, right. I forgot you have the mental level of an 8-year-old.
No, Santa Claus is real. We're not having that discussion because I don't want to hear your negative theories on why he might not be.
Okay, well, we can jump past that. But, you know, just like even...
Santa's so white.
Even saying to Emily, like, hey, dude, Santa Claus is coming tomorrow. She's like... Oh my God, that's tomorrow? And being like, I have a video of like her and Caitlin just like jumping around the room. Santa's coming, Santa's coming, Santa's coming. And like it was really adorable. Well, I love it. Honestly, like one of my favorite things about hanging out with my nieces is my poor sister. They don't even spend that much time with me because they live in a different city, but they've totally adopted like parts of my brother and I's personalities. Like I see it in them and like without, it must just be like in them already. You know what I mean? But I loved watching. So when we were kids growing up, we call it cotton candying. My brother did this thing where, we call it cotton candying because the best example in our minds is my dad would take us to a Red Sox game. He'd get each of us cotton candy. And my brother would purposely eat his really, really slow so that my sister and I would finish ours and then he'd be able to just sit there in front of us and savor it like, huh, I still have some cotton candy left. Oh, isn't this great?
Typically a sign of a selfish lover, by the way.
Don't tell his girlfriend that. But Christmas morning, we're watching Emily and Caitlin open their gifts. And Emily's just like tearing everything apart. She's going to town, which is totally Auntie Shay. But Caitlin's over there like kind of very mindfully watching Emily and everybody else. And of course, she had like three gifts left to open after like even the adults were done.
Yeah.
But it's just like, it's so much fun getting to spend time with them. And then New Year's was normal New Year's of me partying out with my friends, except I was sober and all of them were drunk and it was really funny.
Yeah.
Drunk people are very funny when you're sober.
I got the pregnant wife, so New Year's you just grabbed some food and then watched Dick Clark and I watched Anderson Cooper get drunk.
To be fair,
fun.
I wouldn't say we were talking before we get in the air. We were talking about how could Anderson Cooper not know what Jaeger is? But you think about it, he's a Vanderbilt. Like, he's...
Yeah, but
I don't picture Jaegermeister being in, like, their Hamptons mansion.
But he's also a gay man. And every gay bar that I've ever been in, they've got Jaegermeister, and everybody is knocking back the Jaegermeister.
But see, I don't think of... When I think of Jaegermeister, I think of frat boys. Like, I think of...
Oh, no, no, no. Jaegermeister hasn't just been for frat boys for a long time. I used to, when I lived in Los Angeles at the Red Lion Tavern was right down the street from my place.
Oh, wow. You had a good place.
And the, it was stumbling distance. And the tradition in there.
I've stumbled it.
Yeah. The tradition in there was, you know, you'd get the draft beer, and the draft beer was a full liter. So these are big.
Oh,
know,
I've been to the Red Lion.
European sized pints. You can get them up at Carl's off of Route 1. But you got a shot of Jaeger with every pint.
Jeez.
So, you know, four or five.
It's like four how or five, I used to drink.
Yeah, four or five
it just
beers
wasn't
in.
A deal.
Four or five beers in, you're flying. You know, you've had a night. But over the weekend, this past weekend, we did get down to New York City.
Oh, nice.
We're not going to be down there again for 5 years, probably, maybe more. Kid. Kids ruining everything. Not even born yet, ruining everything.
Tell me how you really feel.
No, I'm kidding. If you find yourself in New York City and you have not seen Come From Away, go see Come From Away. The show is fantastic. Won the Tony a couple years ago. It's about the 9/11 rerouted flights landing on this tiny island.
Oh, wow. That is a very cool concept.
Yeah, landing in this tiny little community called Gander in Newfoundland. And there's 12 people in the cast that play all of the roles. So they play everyone in the community. They play the people on the planes. And it's amazing the way that they go back and forth. The show is just fantastic. The songs are great. The performances are great. Also saw West Side Story when I was down there because I am a huge Ivo Van Hove fan. If you are an Ivo Van Hove fan, it has everything that you love about Ivo Van Hove. The more I've been thinking about it, the more I don't know that it's a great adaptation of West Side Story because he modernizes it, sets it in present-day New York, and strips out some of the more Broadway theater trappings of it. And it works, but just barely. Because
it walks that very fine line, does it?
Here's the problem, as I've come to recognize it. Even if you take all of the Broadway trappings off of it, you take the ballet out, and you take the, it's brought down to a single act, so there's no intermission in it. There's a couple of songs that have been cut. Even if you take all that out and dress it up in modern day, it is still a show that is written about immigrant prejudice and bigotry in the 1950s.
That's what I was going to say. Is I mean, I'm not by any means saying that like immigrant bigotry is dead, but right. It has a very different flavor than it did 70 years ago.
It's changed because the immigrants that are portrayed in West Side Story are recent arrivals to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And the tension that exists between the Sharks and the Jets in that story is really a tension that's handed down from the parents, because the parents of the Jets are watching their neighborhoods change and they're watching jobs disappear. And they're blaming the immigrants for it.
Mm-hmm.
And this carries down to the kids who just automatically hate the immigrants.
Yeah.
The immigrants are just trying to make a life for themselves. And that had a certain resonance to it.
Mm-hmm.
That aspect of the story had a resonance to it in the 1950s.
Yeah.
That doesn't hold up when you think about contemporary racial issues 60, 70 years later.
Yeah.
So
I was going to say, I feel like it would... if they really wanted to present day it up, it couldn't just be, like you said, they shortened it, they did this, they did that. It would have to be actual, like the actual, not the plot, but the actual, what's the word I'm looking for? Syntax, I guess? Like,
yeah.
it would have to be... It would have to just, you'd have to rewrite the whole thing, basically.
It's but it's one of those shows.
There's a reason that, like, I mean, there's a reason it was so powerful in and of the, like, West Side Story in its original form was so powerful, yeah, was because it was perfect for that, like, for that exact moment in time, for that status quo. And that status quo, like you said, is not, is not the same anymore.
And it's brilliant. Ivo van Hove, there's rain throughout the second act, like pouring down on the stage. The entire, you walk in and you're like, where's the set? And there really isn't a set. There is a giant video wall on the background.
Oh, that's super 2020.
Which is very, very Ivo. But at certain points, certain points during the show, the wall opens up and Doc's drugstore and the dress shop are actually in back of the video wall.
Oh, interesting.
So they recess into that space and you can see part of it and you can't see part of it. They are incredibly detailed sets. I mean, the drugstore looks like they just picked up a bodega
and
out
just
of Times Square
and just tossed it in there.
The theater. Yeah. And it's so at certain points, the actors are moving into spaces where you can't see them from the audience, but you see everything up on the screen.
Oh, interesting.
Maria's apartment is somewhere backstage.
Oh, so that's, now I really want to see this.
Yeah, it's this is the kind of stuff that Ivo does, and he's brilliant. He's absolutely brilliant. I just, the problem that I have with it is I don't know that you can just take that show and make it work for a contemporary audience. Because
well, without
of the,
tweaking it one hell of a lot more.
Because, well, but then you've got to go back and you got to start tweaking the characters. You know, you've got to tweak.
Which, ironically, is, I mean, exactly what West Side Story was with Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah.
They tweaked every single character. General, like, baseline plot, same, but, well, not exactly the same, but very, because Maria lives in West Side Story, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does.
I've seen it like 5,000 times, but the most I got out of it is when you're a jet all the way.
And Maria has a spectacular moment at the end of the show. Just amazing moment at the end of the show. The performances are great. The singing and the dancing are spectacular. I tell anybody to go see it.
What's the name of it?
West Side Story?
No, I mean the... This is also called West Side Story?
It is West Side Story.
So it is West Side Story. It's just a completely different...
Yeah, it's a revival of West Side Story that's meant to modernize it. Or that's the approach that they've taken with this version of it. And it kind of holds up. It holds together. But the first reaction that I had when I walked out of the theater was I would really like to see Ivo van Hove take on Rent.
Hmm.
Because it seemed to me... And I think in that reaction, what I was saying to myself is, that's where he's going with this. He's trying to make this into a contemporary musical that young people are going to react to.
Yeah.
And in terms of the cast and the performances, all of that's there. But when you start looking at the themes of the show, it doesn't quite hold together.
Hmm.
So that's my only knock on it. And I've loved everything that Van Hove has done. I've seen, I think, his last five or six, certainly his last five productions on Broadway. Network was one of the most brilliant experiences I've ever had in a theater in my life. David Bowie's Lazarus was mind-blowing. One of the most unforgettable moments I've ever seen in theater. So the guy does great stuff. And there's great stuff happening here. It really comes down to a problem of the show itself pushing back against an attempt to make it contemporary.
I can see, like, where, I mean, it won Best Picture in 1960, the movie of it. And it was obviously, like, critically acclaimed on stage. Like, I can see why he would be resistant to, like, kind of in the spirit of if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
But it is, I mean, if you're going to do an updated version of something, you've got to do an updated version of something.
Yeah. And here's your problem with West Side Story. No matter what you do with it, It's a show written about racism in the 1950s.
Yeah, it's not a show written about racism. It's a show written about racism in New York in the 1950s.
Yeah.
It's like very, it's not a general blanket racism thing. It's like a very specific niche of racism. I hate that I can say that there are niches of racism, but it is what it is.
And I think young audiences are going to look at it and they're going to say, that's not what racism is today.
Yeah. Oh, totally. Like someone in their early 20s is going to be like, huh?
And my generation is going to look at it and they're going to say, that's not applicable anymore. Because we have a longer view of it and we're like, that part of things has changed.
Yeah. Well, but it, with that in mind, though, with in mind that, yes, they want to make this something that's accessible to young people, but they still want to appeal to everybody. And I think that maybe with that in mind is what made him resistant to change too much, because he'd want people like my parents to be able to go to this and not say like they ruined the integrity of the original play.
Right. Which was, which by the way, was my problem. I saw My Fair Lady last year and the show's not running anymore. So I'm not spoiling anything to say this. They changed the ending and Eliza Doolittle leaves.
What?
And I had a huge problem with that.
Yeah. I was going to say that. What is exactly what I'm talking about?
Because it's like, I understand that by today's standards, that's what that character would do. But the story is still set in, you know, turn of the century London.
Yeah. Okay? You can't.
She's not going to go walk off and be an independent woman.
Yeah. That's. Yeah, you're going to piss a lot of people off doing that.
Yeah. but they loved it. The critics were like, oh my God, it's so modern and it's so brilliant. And it's like, no, it's a bit, because they didn't change anything else in the show. That show is supposed to be about the redemption of Henry Hill.
I was going to say, if you change that one aspect, then everything about it has to be different.
And you sit there for 3/4 of the runtime and My Fair Lady is playing out in front of you, and then you get to the very end and Henry Hill has learned nothing and Eliza's walking out the door, and it's like, why did we just go through this?
Yeah, what?
Well, you just killed the resolution of the story. Why did we do any of this? What was this exercise about?
Yeah, it's like all this stuff happened, but in the end everything is exactly the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's silly pants.
I have problems with it.
I haven't been to a show. I haven't been to a production of like a theater or anything in a while. That's what we're supposed to go. Dad, if you're listening, we get those opera tickets. We're supposed to go to the opera, but a couple of factors pushed it off a bit. But get a kick-ass dress to wear. So,
Chris Searle, did you ever see the David Byrne thing?
I did not.
You did not. Yeah. I wanted to. It's available. It's running. Your mic's up over there. It's running for like.
Oh, his mic is up. I was just about to say. I love that you're just like asking him questions like his mic is up, and he's just hanging out over there on his cell phone.
I was charging my cell phone, hanging out, listening. It's in Broadway. It's on Broadway.
It's running for another couple of weeks.
You're using us for our electricity.
Yeah.
Like I think they're done in mid-February because they need the theater for, I don't know, they're bringing SpongeBob back or something.
Yeah, I heard it's awesome.
Well.
I want to go.
Put me on that waiting list.
I was just down there. Yeah. You know, there was no way I was going to convince Molly to see that. So yeah.
SpongeBob.
What's the one that Aaron Sorkin just remade too?
To Kill a Mockingbird. Ed Harris is playing Atticus Finch in it right now.
That would be a cool one to see too.
Oh, cool.
I saw that with Jeff Daniels. Highly recommend it.
Yeah.
I like when movie stars are in Broadway shows.
I really hate directors and writers and producers who tell instead of show. Mm-hmm. You know that old rule in writing, show don't tell.
Right, right.
It's also a rule in law. It's my favorite Latin phrase.
Aaron Sorkin is the one person who can get away with it. Because Aaron Sorkin takes all of those supporting stories that exist in To Kill a Mockingbird and basically turns them into monologue moments for the characters. Mm-hmm. And because Aaron Sorkin knows what he's doing, it works. You know, because what you're getting is the flavor that exists around what's happening in the main story.
He makes Scout the villain?
No, he doesn't. And that was one thing. Like, yeah, the kids are played by adults in the show.
Okay.
But you lose sight of that almost immediately because performances are so good.
Yeah.
And the key moments in the story are all there. The question about To Kill a Mockingbird is the story about the prosecution or is the story about the small town?
Mm-hmm.
And to get it on the stage, the story is about the prosecution. It's about solely about the court case. And all of that small town stuff that surrounds it gets woven into it. But as I said, it gets woven in primarily as monologues by various characters that happen at specific relevant points in the show. It's well done.
How cool would it have been if they had brought back Robert Duvall as Boo Radley?
As Boo Radley? He's not.
They'd have to change Boo Radley's character just the tiniest bit, too. Yeah.
He's not that spry.
He's more intimidating, I think.
He's not that spry anymore. Although
I was going to say, they'd have to explain why Boo has a walker.
Mm-hmm. Scout in the ham costume is one of the more hilarious moments in the show.
Yeah.
Because it's just the visual of, you know, a scout walking around in a ham costume is.
The old Halloween costumes were the best.
Yeah.
The ones that you made on your own, be a ham.
Yeah.
I was going to say, the magic of tinfoil on October 31st.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, Shea Spillane, before we get into the meat of the show tonight.
Ham, meat.
Okay.
Good non sequitur.
What a ham.
Yeah.
What a ham. He turned off your mic, Zini. You're going to say something about that.
Normally, this show goes off the rails a little bit later. And
yeah, we're getting an early start tonight.
And our first show of the year is a look back on the worst of the past year. We've been doing that worst of all the way back
for
to
a
the
decade.
All the way back to the Brian days.
The Brian days.
Yeah.
We remember them fondly.
According to public misinformation and hysteria, it is the end of the decade. It is not, in fact, the end of the decade.
Oh, God, you're one of those.
I'm sorry, but, you know, I'm a...
Yeah, okay, there's no year zero, so technically... Blah, 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 blah.
Correct.
I'm sorry, but things go with the times. Do you consider 1990 to be part of the 80s? No,
yes,
you don't.
Very much.
Bull.
Very much.
Bull.
Very much, because Nirvana Smells Like Teen Spirit came out in 91 and everything changed. So yeah, 1990 is really part of the 80s.
Well then, do you consider 1930 to be part of the 20s?
I wasn't around. Couldn't tell you.
Ah, cheater.
I'm old, but I'm not that old.
Cheater. Well, it's... Okay. So technically, it's not a new decade, but... In modern pulp culture, what's the word I'm looking for? Vernacular, it is.
Here's the thing. Everybody's wrong, but I'm not. This is not a hill I'm going to die on. All right.
Thank God. I thought this show was going to feel a lot longer.
No, I'll let everybody get away with this one.
Why is there a clicker in my purse? That's weird.
So it's the end of the decade.
Oh, my mom gave me that the other night.
I've also been, and I completely failed to acknowledge this, I've been doing this show for a decade.
I know. You told me that in an email. I was like, I feel like, what's the 10-year, is it silver?
That's like 25.
No, I thought that. I'm going to look it up.
Silver is 25.
Gold is 20.
No, gold is 50.
Oh, gold is 50.
Yeah. I think
Thank God I'm not
I think
married.
10 is a kick.
I would mess that up.
I think 10 is a kick in the nards is what you get for the 10th anniversary. That's the kick in the nards.
I'll make sure to remind.
Why are you still here?
Aluminum.
Oh,
we were just talking about tinfoil.
Nice. So tinfoil hats for everyone.
Yay.
So it's been 10 years. since I've been doing this show.
Aluminum or diamond?
Yeah. Ooh. Those would
want
diamond.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, I'm going to go ahead and guess which husbands lost their wives based on their decision.
I'll take...
Here's some Reynolds wrap, honey.
Yeah. I'll take diamond over... Well, no, aluminum. It's... look, honey, it's a new trash can.
To be fair, aluminum is a much more practical gift.
Yes.
You know.
It's much more cost effective as well.
Tis.
We're going to do a look back at the decade, but we're not going to do the usual, oh, here's this story and here's this story, because you can't do it for 10 years.
No, you really can't.
So I set Shay and myself a challenge, which is to pull up the three biggest stories.
I think
of the last decade.
I'm very interested to see if we have a crossover. I imagine we will.
Well, here's what I'm going to say.
I worked hard on this, too, because I wanted context for my reasoning.
Mine are more conceptual than they are specific events.
Mine are specific events, but conceptual.
Right.
Like,
so,
in terms of, like, why that specific event is so important with regard to, like, a bajillion other ones.
We don't do any pre-planning on this show. I just throw a couple of notes at Shay and say, yeah, I'll see
you
like,
on
Wednesday.
We don't discuss.
No. This is as non-professional an environment as it can possibly be.
And we like it that way.
Yeah. I don't want somebody leaning over my shoulder saying, you know, can we get another 5 minutes on this topic? No. We really can't.
No, we will rant about this for 45 minutes if we feel like it. Please and thank you.
We're also going to do the best.
This is a please.
We're also going to do the best thing that happened of the past decade or however. Basically, for Shay, it's pick your favorite. Mine is actually from last year. Because
mine's from 2018.
Yeah. So,
which it's funny because, and for those who don't listen to us, a thing that happened is like our craziest news story, usually from the last week. But it's funny because I was just going through, I keep notes on Google Docs, just like dated for each show. So when I was trying to, I was like, I know there's one that I really loved and just giggled at uncontrollably. And I can't remember what it is. So I'm just clicking through all of my old notes. And I was doing this, Dad, I was on a break. I was doing this at work. And all of a sudden, I just went, ha, like really, really loud. And the lawyer that sits behind me is like, do you?
Do you need a moment?
Yeah, like, are you? What's happening out there? I was just like, I found it. But yeah, mine's from, it's from 2018. And the story, like when it all broke was 2017. So we're...
And we're going to introduce a new feature on the show tonight.
We are going to introduce a new feature on
the show
tonight.
Plus the In Memoriam at the end.
Get excited.
So we got a lot to get through. Well, one thing, Bodie McBoatface did not make my best thing that happened of the decade, although it was pretty close. But it was funny because I went to Zoo Lights last week. And did you go to see the Zoo Lights over there, Chris?
Not this year. It's over now, right?
Yeah.
It's gone.
But they had the big Lego animals mixed in with the real animals, which
nice.
Was cool. But,
oh, yeah, I meant to go to
but
that.
But we're walking through this, and there's this Lego construction of a boat. And I take one look at it, and I go, it's Bodie McBoatface. And sure enough, it was the SS David it was a Lego version of the SS David Attenborough.
Oh, no way.
Which was the Polar Explorer vessel that led to the whole Bodie McBoatface. They asked people to name the boat on the internet. You know, what do you think its name should be? And the internet voted for Bodie McBoatface. And the British scientific community said no. And they named it the David Attenborough, and everyone was highly disappointed.
I was going to say, I love that when you type Bodie McBoatface into Google, the first thing that comes up is a New York Times article that says, Bodie McBoatface, what you get when you let the internet decide.
Yes. Yes.
I should say that Lego animals are easier to clean up than regular animals.
Indeed they are.
Yes.
I imagine so.
I was very disappointed that the lynx was asleep when I was there for Zoo Lights. Mm-hmm. I think they need to work on that. So Shay, we'll let you kick it off.
For biggest news stories?
Biggest news stories of the past decade.
Okay, so mine, my first one, we're going way back to 2011. And for me, it's Osama bin Laden, the raid, and his death. And the reason that I chose this one as one of my top three is because it really kind of, I mean, people who follow the news, people who kind of pay attention to trends in the public and things like that, it's, to borrow a cliche, September 11th changed everything.
Yes.
And I'd say that the, what would we call the decade before last? The aughts, I guess.
Yeah.
The aughts were very much commanded. It was always in the back of everybody. September 11th was always in the back of everybody's mind. And it was always everything that we did, any political or any military action that we took, always kind of had that, like, a little sprinkle of September 11th in there. And because of that, I mean, I thought it was very significant, too, that this happened at the beginning of this decade, because Osama bin Laden being killed was kind of, and obviously never forget, or none of us are ever going to forget September 11th, but it kind of bookended just that whole national feeling, that whole, it didn't put it to rest because obviously so many people passed away. It was really, that was our generation's JFK getting shot. Like, I'm going to remember it for the rest of my life, exactly where I was, exactly how I felt. But it did kind of close the book on it, because as long as Osama bin Laden, it closed the book on the active feeling of it, because Osama bin Laden still being somewhere out there, still having the possibility of being active in some way, made it that it was always really in the air. And then his death, I just remember the feeling of kind of like, yeah. And I think that, like I said, I think it's very significant that this happened in 2011, because it very much, again, we're never going to forget September 11th, but it stopped it being at the front of everyone's mind. It stopped it being so in the air.
It was the move on moment.
Okay,
that decade is closed now, and we're going on. I talked about this on September 11th itself, and one of the things that I brought up is that if you were between the ages of 9 and 14 on September 11th, you suffered a pretty severe psychological trauma.
Yeah.
And we have not addressed that. No one's ever talked about it. You know, we never as a nation took that moment to grieve 9/11. 9/11 happened, and the next day everybody starts flying flags and painting bald eagles all over everything and saying these colors don't run in America. And we went into that. And
yeah, it really just busted onward.
And if that was your reaction to it, number one, you were an adult. And number two, when bin Laden got killed, it was like, yeah, America. I mean, you'll remember there were people standing outside the gates of the White House. And here in Boston, there were people gathered outside the State House, chanting USA, 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 and drinking beer and having a great time. You know, because it's like, yeah, we got them, it's over. And it's like, no, it's not. Because we have an entire generation. And in particular, those who were between the ages of 9 and 14 on September 11th.
I was 15.
Who were fully aware of what was going on, didn't have anybody to talk to, didn't have any way of processing the trauma of that, and have grown up terrified of the world.
Yeah.
And you see that in the way that they live their lives. And it's had a broader ripple effect on millennials. And we hear so much about anxiety disorders and depression and all the rest of this. It's because you have an unresolved childhood trauma.
Yeah. Well, and I definitely, like I said, I was 15, so I was a little outside that bracket you just mentioned. But still, I think back to, and I've chilled out a little bit, but I think back to like even 2012. When they were predicting the end of the world because of like the Mayan calendar and Nostradamus,
yeah.
I spent a good 3 years terrified, like very convinced that it was going to happen. And I tell people that now and they're like, are you kidding me? But a big part of it was that there was this feeling of just, I mean, September 11th felt so like symptomatic of the apocalypse. You know what I mean? And then everything that happened after that, both in reaction to it and just in general, really amped that up. And it was funny because I would like, I literally like, I would go to therapy and a lot of my sessions were thinking the world was going to end. Yeah. I would say to like New Year's of that year, I said to my brother and sister, like, this is it. And they're like, you're insane. And I'm like, no, but it just makes sense with like the climate change and da 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 da. But I remember talking to my mother about it and her being like, we've thought the world was going to end like 20 times over the course of my lifetime so far.
My parents lived through the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah. Like
and World War II. And they were like, 2012.
Yeah. Like my mom was like, when I was
mom didn't make it that far, but my dad was like,
My mom's like, when I was in elementary school, we were hiding under, like, we were learning how to hide under our desks from bombs. Like, but I think September 11th was just so significant in that, I mean, you think of New York City as dangerous to a degree, but just because it's the big city, but it's like, it was such a representation of our country. And we had, America's always had this kind of like, don't mess with us. Like, we're gonna, especially, you know, it's like, we got involved in World War II. We were very instrumental in ending it. It's like, there's this very, and everyone just kind of tries to block out the Vietnam War from their memory. But like, it's we've been kind of callous. We've always been very, like, as a country, we've always been very callous and very pompous about just, oh yeah, I dare you to mess with us. And September 11th was a very like, wow, we are very capable of being messed with. Like,
well, on one level, it the nature of the attack spoke to our reliance on technology and our belief that technology makes us infallible, and the ability of someone to understand that and to turn that against us.
Yes.
And we did not learn that lesson, because we still have
we did not.
All manner of cyber nonsense going on. But on the technology theme, one of my three big stories, and as I said, mine are conceptual rather than specific events, is the rise of the smartphone. Prior to 2008, the iPhone did not exist. And prior to about 2010,
it wasn't common.
The smartphone as we know it now, this fully little internet-enabled gadget, was not a common consumer product. And you may still know some people who walk around with flip phones, and they're out of touch, and we know that they're out of touch.
But they're a punchline, basically.
But the idea that you would sit there and have all of the world's knowledge at your fingertips, plus a camera, plus a movie player, plus a on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
The fact that every last one of us has one of these things now, just about. You know, the Mennonites and the Amish, I think, are still getting by largely without them, shows you how much technology has invaded our lives.
Yeah.
You know, because growing up in the 1970s and the 1980s, which was sort of the golden age of consumer electronics, stereo television came along and digital television came along in the 90s. The VCR came along. The CD player came along. The Sony Walkman came along. If you owned all of that technology, if you had all of those electronics in your home, it was a status symbol. And it was a sign that you were making it. And it took a long time for the VCR, just the basic VCR, to make its way down to everybody.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
That was a luxury item.
The video stores started popping up in 1983. The VCR had been around since 1975.
Mm.
So 8 years just to get it to a mass market item and make it affordable. And then that changed the way that people experienced movies. But you could still live your life perfectly fine without a VCR.
Yeah.
Okay? You can't function in our society without a smartphone.
No, not at all.
You're if you don't have a smartphone, you're off the grid. And good luck trying to do anything.
Well, and it's interesting. I graduated from college in 2008, and the film department fell under the umbrella of the communications department. So for my senior thesis, we had to write, basically we got an assignment. It was write 50 pages about change in media. Like a specific change in media that most affected the way that we as human beings communicate. I wrote my college thesis on Facebook.
That's number two on my top stories of the past decade is the rise of social media.
And well, the thing is, and I still think that that's definitely, and you think about, I wrote this paper in 2008. You think about, and we can get into that more, obviously, but you think about the evolution of Facebook since 2008. I mean, brain explosion.
Yeah.
Like when I wrote my college thesis, I'm pretty sure the news feed had just come out.
Yeah.
That was like the newest feature, was everyone posting statuses and it actually just popping up in front of you. But at the time, I had a Motorola Razr. I had a flip phone. It wasn't, I mean, I think my first smartphone that was even, like my first, and it was still like very primitive, incredibly primitive, was a BlackBerry when I started working for my dad in 2009. And I mean, it's, and I think the two very much go hand in hand in terms of the rise of the smartphone and the rise of social media, because it used to be that you want to go on Facebook, you have to be in front of your computer. You want to go on ABCDEFG, you have to be in front of your computer. And now it's so much like, it's just, it used to be a like a side order on our lives, but now it's the main dish. It's, I mean, there are people who, were it not for social media and were it not for the fact that it's at my fingertips 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, that I wouldn't have contact with because right. of various reasons.
But above and beyond, but that's one aspect of it. Here's another aspect of it. We used to talk on the phone.
Yeah.
And when cell phones first came out, everybody was talking on the phone all the time. That was the great thing about it, is I can talk to people in the car. I can talk to people in the doctor's office. I can talk to people in the restaurant. I can talk to people. People were on the smartphones, cell phones all the time. With the smartphones, with texting, and with Facebook, and with Messenger, and with Twitter, we talk to more people, but we don't talk to them face-to-face anymore.
Yeah.
Everything,
which I hate, by the way. Texting is my
yeah. Well, it's,
I like hearing someone's tone of voice when they're speaking to me, because, well, especially texting.
That's what the poo emoji is for.
But like, the thing I hate about texting is it really has, like, if I was writing my senior thesis now, I would say that texting in general has changed how we as human beings communicate, because when you're having a conversation with somebody, like you and I are talking, you're obviously listening to me. I can tell you're listening to me.
Yeah.
But you're not going to sit and ponder the sentence that's coming out of my mouth right now. Why would you? I just said another sentence. There we go. With texting, you send one sentence and the other person can ruminate on it and think of the 30 different ways that you could possibly mean it. Think of the 30 different things that you could possibly have been thinking as you wrote it, and why and how. It's very inorganic. It's very like, and especially like the way that I'm speaking right now, you can tell I'm annoyed by texting just by the tone of my voice, just by the way that I'm speaking. But if I talked about texting like this, you would think that I was really positive about it. You know, sorry, I had to go off on that little rant because, like, there have been so many times that I've been like, I wish texting didn't exist. I want to talk to this person. I want to just talk to them on the phone, especially because I get a dope voice.
But here's the thing. Part of the reason that social media rose is because of these.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Because now, everybody, it used to be if you wanted a keyboard to make texting easier, you had to get a BlackBerry. Those mm-hmm. were expensive.
Yeah, as opposed to, I don't know if you kids listening out there remember when there were three letters assigned to each number.
Yep.
Like texting on a Nokia.
Forget it.
It took like 10 minutes.
Now.
Just to be like, no, I wanted N, not M.
Everybody's got a full keyboard and everybody's got a camera. So you can sit there and you can post to social media all day long.
Yeah.
You can react to social media all day long. You go out, and this is one of the things that drives me nuts. I will go out and I will be at a restaurant and I will see at other tables, like everybody's sitting there looking at a phone.
Oh, yeah.
Like, why did you even bother going out together?
Yeah, like I remember I was auditioning for the, I think it was the Seattle International Comedy Competition. And the audition was in Seattle, but it was people, you know, obviously I was from Boston. There are people that had come up from LA. There are people that had flown in from Chicago. There were like, backstage, there were probably 12 comedians in the green room and from all over the country. And it was one of those moments, I got to say, I'm really proud of it because I said the exact right thing at the exact right moment. But I was in the green room and I had been looking at the lineup or something, but I looked up and I look around and here's these 11 other comedians and every single one of them is sitting in a room with people who are in their community, who they should have like so much to talk to about and get to know and network and da da da. And they're all sitting on their phones. And I just said, hey guys, isn't it so wonderful how much technology has brought us all together? And everyone just like kind of looked up, looked around and got what I was saying and laughed. But like,
and then went back to their phones.
And then went back to their phones. Yeah. A couple people peeled off. But it is, I mean, well, it reminds me of that, what do you call it? It reminds me of, this came up probably 5 years ago and I thought it was so brilliant. There was this restaurant that had a lot of complaints about how they said, you know, we've been coming here for years and like the service is so slow now, like we don't know what happened, da 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 da. So the restaurant ended up referring to their security cameras from like 15 years ago and then from the present day, and then wrote a breakdown of like watching people have meals. And in the present day one, it was like stop server to ask them to take a picture of them and all their friends. Writes like takes pictures of the food before biting into it. Like it's all this stuff that's making you very and this is something I've been trying to be conscious of a lot more recently, is like being in the moment. It makes you disconnect. It's weird, it's ironic because you're taking a picture of this thing you're doing to show that you're doing it, but it's taking you out of doing it.
Right.
By stopping to do that.
It's like nothing has actually changed at the restaurant. The way that you experience the restaurant and your attention span have changed.
Oh, exactly. Well, and that's like, I go on a, I like to walk a lot. Like I like to like go on like nature hikes and crap.
Nature hikes and crap.
But I like to like go on nature hikes and
I like trees.
I will. I'll stop and take pictures if it's a pretty sunset, trees. If it's a cool view. But I do have to sometimes stop and remind myself, like, dude, just enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like, just, yeah, okay, you can, if you're going on an hour-long walk, you can take, like, 4 pictures, but, like, when you get to, like, a really nice spot or something, but just, like, be there. Like,
I walk into a movie theater, the phone goes away. I walk into a theater, the phone goes away. I walk into a restaurant for dinner, the phone goes away.
Yeah, I was at yoga the other day, and
if
a girl,
anybody has the audacity to bother me by calling or texting me during a meal, it better be an emergency.
Yeah, I was at yoga the other day and a girl, like they have like little cubbies and they lock the door in, you know, the entrance, and then you go into the room. I do heated yoga, so it's like enclosed room.
Toasty yoga.
But a girl, yeah, feel like you're in a sauna doing yoga.
Bikram.
I love it. It's awesome. But there was a girl who brought her cell phone in and like had her phone like next to her mat. And it was one of those things where I was like, am I being like too much that person that it's like really bothering me that her phone is in here? Like, am I being one of those? I really want to say something. I'm not going to say something because I don't want to be that person. And then I look around the room and I see that like everyone else is kind of like staring daggers at the fact that her phone is in there. And I'm like, okay, so maybe somebody else will be that person.
So none of you are centered, is what you're. Somebody brings a phone into the room, and your little bubble world collapses.
Well, it's just that's the whole point of doing yoga, particularly Bikram yoga.
Oh, someone brought in a phone. Who cares? I'm
Well, no. The whole point is to have everything be left in the outside world. You know what I mean? Like the outside world left there, and being able to just focus on what you're doing in that moment. But then the instructor walked in and said, "Oh, I hope it's not a problem. Actually don't allow cell phones here." and me and the other people all kind of looked around at each other like,
yeah,
but it is, I mean, and yes, you're right, the point of yoga is to get to a point of zen where it's like it doesn't matter if there's a building collapsing behind you, you can be chill. But the point of going to yoga class is to learn to do that. But it's, there's so many things like that where I'm just like, even just in line at 7-Eleven while the guy's getting 8 number 2s and 37 number 37s. I hate those people.
Lotto zombies.
I like scratch tickets, but I'll like get 1 or 2.
Yeah. Can't stand the lotto zombies.
Oh, yeah. But I'll be behind a girl in line. She's staring at her cell phone. I'm like, ahem.
Yeah.
Like, you have all day to do that.
Yeah.
Like, in this 3 minutes that you're getting a pack of Marlboro Lights, just stand there.
Yeah.
It's not going to kill you. You can just stand there. Maybe you'll strike up a conversation with me. I like your shoes, too. Like, hey. No one. Yeah, this is WMFO Medford, by the way. There's no sun up in the sky.
Stormy weather. Your Boston 5 day forecast. We'll call it variable.
Variable. That's a fun term for winter.
I call it seasonable, but it's really not. If you are out tonight, folks, be very, 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 very careful. Between the snow squalls that are blowing through here and the rapidly dropping temperature, this is a perfect night for black ice, whether you're walking, whether you're driving, whatever you're doing. Please be careful out there. Temperature's going down into the low 20s tonight. It's going to be windy. It's going to be nasty. There may be some very, very strong but brief snow squalls blowing through. If you find yourself in one of those, slow down. Get over on the side of the road. Don't try and drive through it. Tomorrow, it's going to be seasonable. Mostly sunny. High of freezing. Low in the upper 20s.
Oh, it's such a fun freeze. High of freezing.
Yeah, well, that's it. Friday, less seasonable. Partly cloudy. High in the low 50s. Low in the mid 40s Friday night. And then Saturday, beach day. Cloudy skies, 60s.
Ooh, I'm going on a hike on Saturday.
60s. It's going to be in the upper 50s on Saturday night. Sunday.
Who wants to go on a hike with me?
Rain in the morning. High in the mid-60s. And then Sunday night, the temperature falls back into the 30s and all the water mains break. So there you go.
I was going to say, so if you weren't already planning on filling your tires four times over the next 10 days.
Right. Yeah.
Sorry, but toss that on the calendar.
You got yourself 36 hours to get out there and enjoy some unseasonably warm weather. Take a hike in the mountains and then go back inside before it gets cold. 855-915-9636. It is The Big Picture. When we come back, more of our top stories of the decade. We're going to be debuting something brand new on the show. Stick around for that.
Get excited.
And our annual tribute to some of those that we lost in 2019.
Just the one Derek likes.
We'll be No. This thing's a battle every year because there's always more people I want to get into it than I can.
Wait, you mean lots of people die each year?
Yes. Yes. Lots of important and good.
Do you want me to talk to them and be like, look, too many of you important people are dying.
I need a cap.
If we could cap it at 10.
I think about 17. Awesome. 17 is the cap.
17's
the cap. 17. 17
such a
people
random
can
number.
Die.
17. All right.
Yep.
So everyone out there, famous people, if you're listening, 2020, only 17 of you can die. So discuss it amongst yourselves.
Yep. Once the 17th person is gone,
I don't want any
the rest
random suicides.
Right. Once the 17th person is gone, I expect the rest of you to stay healthy into 2021.
Yes. No amping up the drug use. No driving recklessly with no seatbelt.
This is WMFO Medford.
And don't be Robert De Niro because you're not allowed to die.
Happy New Year, baby.
Happy New Year, nothing. The way you treated me last year wasn't nothing happy about it.
Yeah, babe, but that was last year. This year I'm turning over a new leaf.
I don't believe it.
You don't? Well, pick up on this, child. Happy New Year, baby. Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year, baby. Happy New Year to you. Well, I made a resolution. I'm gonna keep the whole year through. I'm gonna give up chasing women, whiskey drinking too, stop my ballyhooing, yes, and mistreating you. Happy New Year, baby. Happy New Year to you. Yes, I want plenty loving from nobody else but you. I'm gonna give you all my money to buy the things you choose. I even steal and borrow and pawn my clothes and shoes to keep you happy, baby. Happy the whole year through. Cause I want plenty loving from nobody else but you.
sweet and pretty, I'll buy you a big brass bed. If I catch you cheating, I'll fill you full of lead. Happy New Year, baby. Happy New Year to you. Well, I want plenty of loving from nobody else but you. That's what I mean.
This is Sarah Beck, consumer meat specialist for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, with a few suggestions on handling frozen meat. If you buy meat that is already frozen, be sure to place it in your freezer as soon as you get home. If you can't go directly home with your purchase, the packages can be wrapped in newspaper, for example, to prevent thawing. While freezer storage is a convenient way to keep meat, be sure you check the recommended storage time for each type of meat and date the packages so you'll know which to use first. If stored too long, meat will begin to lose its flavor, but it will still be wholesome. It's best to thaw meat in the refrigerator. If you don't use the meat once it's thawed, you can safely refreeze it as long as it remains in good condition. For more free information, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, D.C., 20250.
I'm going to the hardware store.
Oh, will you pick up 800 lumen bulbs?
800 more flowers? The neighbors will think we're wacky.
Not flower bulbs, light bulbs.
Come on, Dad. Lumens tell you how bright the bulb is. We can replace our 60-watt bulbs with energy-saving bulbs that give off about 800 lumens.
So, we'll save money.
Right.
Got it. 800 lumens and more savings.
Lumens, the new way to shop for light. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
MFO Medford, 91.5 FM. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Shay Spillane. With me, as always, is my illustrious co-host, Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock. If you want to give us a call at 855-915-WMFO.
Counting down our top stories of the decade.
We are.
We've gotten through two of mine, which are the rise of the smartphone and the concurrent rise of social media.
Yes.
And on Shay's side, we talked about the death of Osama bin Laden. So,
and everything surrounding that.
You are next to go.
So my next, like I said, my...